human beings are meaning-making machines, and we make up stories about what happened, and then we think they're real, and we live our life according to those stories. And until we become aware and can challenge them, that's our reality. We're not loving what is, we're living in what is and thinking we don't know how to get out of it.
Hi, I'm Barb Nangle. I want to welcome you to my podcast, Fragmented to Whole, Life Lessons from 12-Step Recovery, where I help people heal their emotional, psychological, and spiritual wounds and make deep, lasting changes in their lives. I'm the founder and CEO of Higher Power Coaching and Consulting. I'm a boundaries coach who specializes in helping women who are focused on what others are thinking and doing and neglect themselves in the process. And I have coached hundreds of people on how to build healthy boundaries using my exclusive BUILD framework. On this podcast, I share my experience, strength, and hope from recovery. I don't support or endorse any particular 12-step recovery fellowship, and I don't claim to speak for any particular 12-step fellowship. I also don't believe that 12-step recovery is the only way to recover. You might need additional help. I'm an avid beachcomber who collects sea glass, shells, wood, and stones. I am a formerly closeted fan of the Hallmark Channel, especially the Christmas movies. Hello, Christmas in July. I wear fingerless gloves from September to June because my hands are always cold, so I have about 15 pairs. And I get a huge kick out of counting how many days, weeks, and months there are until my birthday or Christmas at completely random times of the year. My hope is that you'll find my words concretely helpful in improving your life, whether you're in recovery or not. If you like what you've heard on this episode, please screenshot it and share it on your social media and tag me at Higher Power Coaching.
This is episode 260, Loving What Is, with guest Wendy Foster. As you probably know, every 10th episode, I have a guest, someone else in recovery, to share their experience, strength, and hope, because I want to make sure that you're not just hearing me from time to time. And today I have Wendy Foster on, and I'm really excited to hear what she has to say about loving what is. I have come a very long way in regard to that. I definitely am much more accepting of what is. I don't always love what is, but I was telling her I'm going through a rough patch right now, and I am sometimes having a hard time loving what is. So I'm really excited to hear what she has to say. So take it away, Wendy. We'd love to hear your experience, strength, and hope of recovery.
Thank you, Barb. I'm so excited to be here and share a little bit about my story and loving what is, which is ongoing, by the way, for me as well. I'd like to start back with discovering in my late 20s that, you know, a lot of the characteristics that I had stopped me. I stopped myself in a lot of areas, and I couldn't figure out why. And why did I feel this way? And why did I feel that way? Or why did I feel really powerful at sometimes, and then it would change and I would feel so shy. So what I discovered is I got a counselor and she started to do some digging with some timeline therapy and stuff. And I realized that a lot of stuff happened really young for me. And one incident that was extremely powerful, impactful in my life was that my father died by suicide just before my third birthday. I can say that without emotion now because I've done a lot of work on it, but the trauma around all of that and growing up in an alcoholic home was very impactful, and I didn't realize it until I got into the work much later. When you're that young, especially back in those days, parents did not talk to their children about suicide or death or anything. They were just talked around. So being a young child and very quiet and sensitive anyway, I always heard a lot of things. And of course, at that age, I didn't understand a lot. But growing up, I was told, well, you didn't know your father anyway. It didn't affect you. Well, years later, becoming an early childhood educator and teacher trainer, I know darn well how much that affects children. And it's no blame on my parents. They always did the best they could with what they could. And my dad could not cope. He was a binge drinker, would often disappear for sometimes months at a time and leave province out of Ontario and go back to PEI. So there was a lot of stress and tension for my mother. And really having three children and living that life was challenging and working full time and trying to keep it together. That was one of the big impactful things that I still come back to, because I know that a lot of my fears of abandonment came from that, because not only was my father not in the picture, but my mother was trying to cope with everything. So she really couldn't be there. She's trying to be 10 places at once. And being the quiet child that I was, I just withdrew. So I became very shy and quiet. I was always the people pleaser from very early on. And that was my way to cope. And it worked very well a lot of the time. Later on, a bit later on in life, I think I was about six. Now, this would never happen today, but my mother let me go to the store by myself in Ontario with a little change purse and a list from my neighbor of picking up a few things at the convenience store. And I was so excited. I thought, wow, I get to be the big girl now. So off I went with change purse in hand, and I got up there. It's probably three blocks away. And two teenage boys or older boys, I don't know how old they were. They seemed giant to me as a very petite six-year-old, knocked me down, took the money, and ran. I was terrified. I was traumatized. And I think I was in shock because I didn't know what to do. I would start to walk towards the store and go, well, I can't go to the store because I can't get the stuff. I'd start to walk back home and go, oh, I'm going to be in trouble because this happened. It was my fault. You know, even that young, I took on a lot of, oh, it's my fault. So shortly after that, my mother was wondering what took me so long, and she came to find me. Much of this story is retold to me by her because I blacked it all out. And I did that a lot in my life. That became a mechanism to protect myself. I would block things out and totally forget. In fact, one of the phrases I would tell myself over and over, there's something uncomfortable, forget it, forget it, forget it. Until I actually did. Our brains are that powerful. So what happened next was my mother flagged down a police officer, and he told me to get in the back of the car and duck down, and we're going to go look for the boys that knocked me down. I look at that now and go, oh my gosh, that's so scary. No wonder I really went inward. However, we did find them, and one of the boys was sent to juvenile. This is not their first rodeo. And the second one, I guess, was a warning or whatever else they did. But I remember having fears, and I don't know if this came from television or whatever, that, you know, these boys are going to hunt me down. They're going to hurt me, or they're going to hurt my family. So this was a basis I had no memory of. Like, it was there. And until I started doing the therapy in my adulthood, I did not know how powerful and how strong that was, what an impact it made, and how it affected my life. So fast forward, moving to PEI. So
for those who don't know PEI, Prince Edward Island, yes. I assume you mean, yeah.
That's the Maritimes, the eastern side of Canada. So it was a small place. So we went back to where my parents grew up to live a safer life where people don't lock their doors. You don't have to worry about getting mugged or being chased. There was all kinds of things that happened violent around us in our community. But I was so shy and so afraid of everything and everyone that when my mom said, go two doors down from my aunt's place, knock on the door, your cousin Lynn is there, and go play. I'm like, she might have been telling me to go knock on the door of the Wizard of Oz, whose scary green face is going to scare the pants off me. And I finally got the courage to go. She wouldn't come with me. And my cousin was having a bad day and had been grounded. She wasn't allowed to go out and play. So what I basically got was, nope, I'm not allowed. Slam the door in the face. So it just confirmed. See, this is what I know about myself to be true. Again, it affected me. Going to school on the first day in Ontario, which is another province in Canada, we wore dresses to school. So in PEI, I go to school with a dress on my first day, and I'm ridiculed because the girls wear jeans. So it's like, it kept being like, it's not okay to be who I am. I grew up, and again, you know, my mom was remarried. I had two siblings, so I actually became almost like a young mother when my sister was born when I was five. And literally pushing around in my doll carriage, like, there's just so many weird things. And my dad told me, as we grew up in PEI, my dad kept saying to me, you know, you're raising these kids, you're such the mom to them. And I took it as a compliment, but I'd often find myself as a teenager no, mom and dad, you go out to the dance and I'll stay and look after the kids, because I did not want to go out and socialize. I didn't want to be, I just wanted to stay in my little protective bubble. And it was always my dad that would say, no, no, you need to go out and be with your friends, and encourage me that way. People pleasing. Let's go back to people pleasing for a second, because I learned that really early on. If you were quiet and smart and cute and didn't make any waves, you know, don't rock the boat is a phrase I like to use, then everything was fine. If you didn't, you know, as my siblings came along, it became if they were bad, in quotations, you know, they would get the belt. And I wanted to avoid that, like the plague, and I never did. Years later, I asked my father that as an adult, because I said I always wanted to protect my younger brother and sister, and always wondered why you never hit me. And the one thing was, well, you never did anything wrong. And next was, you weren't my biological child. And that hit me in different ways as well. We tend to make meaning of lots of things in our lives. And I often talk to people about human beings are meaning-making machines. And we make up stories about what happened, and then we think they're real, and we live our life according to those stories. And until we become aware and can challenge them, that's our reality. So we're not loving what is, we're living in what is and thinking we don't know what, how to get out of it. Much later, when I had gone through the therapy and whatnot, there was a couple of things that the therapist told me. And one was, due to my background, she said, why don't you check out Adult Children of Alcoholics program? And I didn't even know there was such a thing. I'd heard of AA years and years ago through family members, but I hadn't heard of this. And when I first went to the meeting and heard a couple people share their stories, I was blown away. It was like, I'm in a room full of people, and all of a sudden, there's so many people like me. I just couldn't believe it. I got so excited. And as is my nature, I dove right in and devoured whatever I could, you know, shared more with people, jumped in to be of service, went to a conference that was held in Victoria at the time on Vancouver Island. That's the west coast of BC in Canada. And I was so moved by the speakers and the people doing the work and sharing where they've come from that I volunteered to chair the next year. So if you're thinking about this person who was so shy and introverted, then taking on something like that, it was a huge leap. It felt like the program was the wind beneath my wings to allow me to stand up and take that on and be the catalyst for somebody else to have that experience. Because it wouldn't be me doing it, it would be me organizing it. And which I did the next year. Then I left for some reason, I don't even know how it happened, but I left ACOA and I went on to other things. I had a young daughter at the time. And what happened is, if I look at it back now, I started to fall into old patterns again and behaviors. And anytime a new situation would come up, I would revert by default to my old ways of being. And I never did love what is. It was like I was never good enough, no matter what. No matter what I did, what I accomplished, that conference, it was like, no, that wasn't me. Always, it was that kind of thing. So when my daughter was about 18 months old, I was remarried. This was my second marriage. There's a whole other story behind that of getting married because my parents thought I should. So I did. Oh my goodness. Anyway, so my daughter was 18 months old, and right across from where we lived, there was a park, and I used to walk her there all the time. And it was on the news that that particular park, there had been some assaults on women. And I didn't know it at the time, but I froze. And I remember saying to my husband, do you want to come over to the mall with me? It's just across the street, and just go for a little walk around the mall. And he goes, no, no, you go ahead. I'd already had my shoes on. So I started taking my shoes off, and he looks at me and says, why aren't you going to the mall? I said, I don't want to go by myself. He's like, what are you talking about? It's right across the street. I said, I'm afraid. When I look into it now, I was terrified because somebody had been attacked in that park. It brought back memories, subconscious memories of my being attacked when I was very, very young. And that was what happens in the body with our reactions. It feels real. It's like our brain's telling us we're in danger. This is happening. And we go into flight, fight, or freeze. And that's what was happening. My body was reacting. I was shaking. It was as if I was being attacked. And we sat down and talked about that. And then he said, he was very straightforward, my husband. He said, well, you can't go through your life being afraid of things. You got to do something about it. I was furious with him at the time but it was a big gift. And that's what led me to go deeper into what's going on with me. One of the things I did was I took a self-defense course for women, and I was terrified because I hate, you know, there was violence in my home, there was alcohol in my home, so I avoided very well all of those things in my life. When I think about self-defense, I was thinking about, oh my gosh, someone's going to grab me and I'm going to have to defend. I will freak out, which I did, by the way. As it turned out, the gentlemen that were doing the class were fantastic. We learned a few things, and I learned mostly it's about confidence. It's about confidence, about even not becoming the victim in the first place. You know, walking with your head held high. You've got an air of confidence. You're not going to be the chosen one most times because there's an easier target out there. It sounds terrible, but for an attacker, they're going to look for somebody like animals. They're going to look for the weaker link that they can catch for their dinner or whatever. It's the same kind of thing. So fast forward, that turned into, I saw the benefit for the women in my group, especially myself, being so terrified to then feeling confident. I went into a karate program, and literally, this is embarrassing to say now, but it's funny and it's such a great learning experience. Anytime a partner, these were women, I worked with women. We did this together, all of us moms. It was so fun. Our kids were like preschool age and school age. And whenever a woman would come at me with a punch or something, I literally duck, scream, and run out of the dojo. I was so affected. I just could not. My brain would go automatically into an old mode and I would react. And it took me, I didn't quit. I don't know how I stayed. There was something inside said, no, you can get past it. You can get past it. And I had a loving support system, just like in the program, where it was helping me get through these things. And I ended up getting my black belt in the end, which was that's quite a feat.
From running and screaming to black belt. That's awesome. That could be a subtitle of this show.
Yeah. But the underlying thing, and the reason I get so passionate about all of this and loving what is that's who I was. That's who I am. I can react. I'm also very playful. So I can make light of something that was very scary and use it as a teaching tool to help others. I'm passionate about people, especially women, having their own voice. And really honoring themselves. If I'm afraid, I'm going to say so. Even if it sounds stupid, and that word stupid was a big one for me. Whenever I hear anybody calling themselves stupid, I call them on it right away. Wait a minute. No, you're not stupid. Maybe what you're doing is stupid behavior, but I don't even think the word stupid fits. These are little things that, you know, niggle at me. I call them in the gremlins. So I'm passionate about helping women, especially to reclaim that voice inside of who they really are, and that it's okay. It's okay to be afraid. It's okay to be mad. It's okay to be feeling all our emotions. It's okay to stand up for yourself. It's okay to be out there. It's okay to wear what you want to wear and not be. There's another incident that came clear to me. My mother had said to me, I bought this cute little outfit and I put it on and I showed it to her. And she said, you're not going to wear that out, are you? You're just asking for it. I tried to wear it twice after that, never could. And then once I learned what that was about, I went back and changed. You know, if I want to go out wearing something that I think might be seductive or something like that, it's totally okay because I'm not doing something for anybody else. I'm wearing something because it makes me feel good. Took a long time to come around to that. That was a bit of a sidebar, but it's kind of attached. And when things happen in my brain, I like to say them because there's probably a learning lesson there. It's okay to be. It's loving what is, right? And I didn't think I even had it. I wasn't confident in my body or anything. And it wasn't until years later, I look back and go, wow, I wasn't the ugly, geeky, skinny kid that I thought I was. Always wanting to, mom, I wish I could be fat.
That's unusual to hear.
I know. And it's actually the same. People used to say, when people say to you when you're slim, you know, oh, you're so skinny, you should put some weight on. It's just the same as if you said to somebody, oh, you're so right. fat, you should lose some
Agreed.
Weight. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
It's just people don't think of the impact that has on somebody, especially when we don't have a good body image of ourselves.
So how did you get into 12-step recovery, Wendy?
My story goes a little further where moving away from program, moving away from things and taking on life and life getting difficult. I discovered that alcohol actually helped me to deal with my emotions. And I remember back when I was 16 the first time, because I always tried to be the goody two-shoes so I never would get into trouble. When I was 16, a family friend got his sister and I, you know, here, try this drink. And the immediate effect on me was incredible. I went from feeling really shy to feeling very powerful almost immediately. And I really liked it, but I hated the taste of the alcohol. Fast forward, I learned that, wow, anytime I felt uncomfortable, I found that I could use that and I didn't have to drink that drink. Although it wasn't too bad because it had orange juice in it, but it was still bitter. But the effects drew me in. And so later in life, anytime something would get hard, I would feel uneasy. It was like I was a go-to. My parents drank only on weekends. I now call them, you know, they call them weekend alcoholics. An alcoholic's an alcoholic, but that was my deciding thing. So I learned like, oh, okay, now I understand why they would do that. You know, you get home from work on Friday and you're tired, you've had a tough week, and all the stresses, let's just melt them away and you know, have a few drinks. So that kind of stewed for a while and it progressively got worse. I never drank during the week early on, but later it got to be more and more, and there was excuses, right? Like, it's a celebration, let's have a drink. It's a sadness, let's have a drink. I'm upset. Whatever it is, whatever the emotion is, it seemed to be that alcohol was an answer. That grew to be a problem, and it grew over the years to be a very big problem. And I was following fairly too closely into my father's footsteps and becoming a binger and blackouts and hating myself and knowing differently, but not doing differently, not knowing how to stop it, not knowing how to, I just was too afraid to feel what I was feeling. I became unhappy in the marriage, so that added to it. I had children, so I just felt trapped. I felt trapped in my life. I hated who I was. And, you know, every morning you get up, who's the first person you see in the mirror? And I would have lots of times where I was confident and loving myself, but it grew to be more that I wasn't. And anytime I gave into that obsession, I whittled away more at my own self-esteem and self-worth. It really is like a eating, like a flesh eating disease. It's a soul eating disease. And it got me. It got me well. And later on, remarried in another relationship that started really from nothing to go back to PEI, literally with debt, nothing but debt. I went back with no home, no car, no money, $15,000 debt to start over again because I knew something had to change. I also had my own suicidal attempts. And one of them was quite severe, and ended up in hospital for about, I think, 8 days. You know, it still wasn't enough. It still wasn't enough to get me out of that stuckness, that darkness, to see who I really was. And I believe, again, that my passionate for helping people get unstuck and see the greatness in who they are, the brilliance of who they are, no matter where they are, even if they're in that dark place and they have messed up their lives and they've lost relationships, it's not who they are. Because I believe truly who we are is brilliant human beings and overcoming whatever it is meant to overcome. I see the beauty and greatness in everyone. It's a gift I have. It's not something I learned. It's a gift I have. And unfortunately, I did not see that for myself. That was a problem. I almost lost everything. My husband, we're together. We're stronger now than ever. Why he stayed? Man, I wouldn't even tell him about Al-Anon stuff. I didn't want to tell him about enabling because I was terrified. If he learns this stuff, he's going to leave me. And what's my biggest fear from childhood? Being abandoned. So everything plays on itself. So I went to AA. I'd gone to AA before, a few years before. And I had a bad experience. Now, every group is different. Every sponsor is different. Every person is different. I had a bad experience with a sponsor after my 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was told I was being selfish and something else by leaving the program. I can feel it. I can feel it in my heart as I speak. It hit me hard. And I was like, okay, I'm not safe. I don't feel safe. And I didn't go back for many years. Coming back just a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, was a different story. I dove in like I did to ACA many, many years ago. I dove in every ounce of me, went to meetings every day, was of service right away. We needed a treasurer in our group. You're supposed to have a year of sobriety, but nobody was standing up. And I'm like, I'm going to stand up. Did I want a treasurer position? Not in your life. I was terrified of it. And I thought, well, it's of service to my group. And I took on that. And then I took on the rally. I took on things because when I experienced something somebody had done that was made a difference for people, I wanted to be a part of it. And we had an amazing rally. We had, there used to be 3 people on the committee every year. I had 16 people on a committee.
Wow.
And it's due to my love and care for people, loving them where they're at, being enthusiastic about the difference we're making, not about this is a job. Let's make it fun. Let's make it playful. That's my motto. If it's not fun, I'm not doing it. I can make work fun. And we do. We do. And we had a brilliant time. Fast forward now to December. This is probably my biggest growth experience over many, many years, and I didn't get it until recently. In fact, I think I didn't really get it until around the time I talked to you. So it's not that long ago where I made the connection because I started writing. I've been asked to do a speaking thing, and I was asked to share my experience, strength, and hope about recovery. And I started with the alcohol story, and I went, no. It goes back to ACOA. It goes back to the personal development. At Christmas time, something happened again with my son and my granddaughter, and my feeling not valuable, not worth it, that it don't matter, it all came flushing back. And I found out later, I stood up with my son and I said, you know, I can't do this anymore. I'm not staying for Christmas. I'm not staying for any of this. I'm going back to my husband and my daughter because I need to go where I'm loved and appreciated. And I just felt that wasn't there with my family. It wasn't there with my son or his wife. And I couldn't be with my granddaughter. And I was just devastated. But the standing up part was huge. I mean, we're both bawling. And it was so emotional. And it was like 3:30 in the morning because I'm catching a flight at 4:15. And when I came home, this whole big burden left me. And I realized shortly after, it's none of that. For most of my life, I left my son when he was young. We were supposed to be having joint custody. There was a mix-up with my lawyer. My ex got full custody. So that was a thing in itself. But for my whole life, I always thought I needed to be a certain way. I needed to wear that mask and pretend to be something or mold myself so that my son would never leave me, would never cut that tie. What a revelation. What a revelation. That has been running my life under my radar for so long. And my worthiness, my success, any level that I wanted to reach, I always took myself out with self-sabotage, not knowing why, mm-hmm. because I've done all this other work and I've been in the program. I've learned from others. I've followed steps. The promises have come true in so many areas. But when we're not aware of something, it runs underneath, unseen, unrecognized, and it can wreak havoc even in these little ways. Over here, when everything else is perfect, not perfect, everything else is great.
Right, yeah.
And that revelation has opened up not only better communication with my son, I now FaceTime with them every week. So my granddaughter will get to know me. She'll never forget. My son is beaming. He's taken on communication with me, whereas before it was like people would phone and say, you know, is Jamie dead or something? Like we never hear from his grandma out here, you know, things like that. Now he said he made a commitment in January to have better communication with family. He's living up to that. That's so huge. It's so huge.
I'd like to hear, I know that one of the things you said to me was that like me, you had done a lot of different stuff, but recovery really kind of got at the issues that you were dealing with. So can you give a couple examples of that, of what recovery did for you that other things did not?
One of the biggest things that I got out of recovery is finding my higher power. I thought I had. I'm not a religious person. I've always been spiritual, but I did not tap into and connect with on a deep, deep level until this happened in December. And all of a sudden, my higher power It's like I was scooped up and the promises started coming true immediately. My connection and in the meetings, and I've been asked now to share stories like outside of speaker meetings. And there's so many things happen because I'm not blocked anymore. And I'm not running the show. It's not up to me. I can love myself exactly as I am and as I'm not. I can love what is. If what is pulling myself through the mud and learning the lessons and coming up and having a group to support me. And I call it like a life plan, right? The steps are a life plan. It's often said in meetings, why don't we teach this in school?
Yeah.
Why don't we teach this in school? And how could we? And well, we are. We're the school of life, you and I right now. And we're sharing the message of what's possible in recovery. And it really is true. I like the meetings where the promises are read every time. And then more people share the promises coming true and how they're coming true and where they were. I was suicidal to now I'm on top of the world. I get to share a message of my personal grief and sadness and illness and my triumph over that through this work. I mean, that's magical. And my higher power, the word God in meetings never worked for me until I changed it to goddess of divinity. And my goddess of divinity, my God, is like a sparkly angelic type figure. And she's been there a long time. I just didn't recognize that as God. And now that I fully embraced her and the God in me, my life has done a complete turnaround. And I'm excited for what's next. Also, my fears, I can love what is. I can be afraid to take on another project. I can be afraid to say what I want to say to somebody. And I just click in and go, well, my God is saying, what my God say? She's speaking. I'm her vessel. I believe my whole purpose on earth is to help women especially find their voice, stand up for themselves, create their boundaries, push the envelope, know that they can be guided and be driven to what is true for them, how to express themselves in the world. We each are here for a reason.
I love that. So how can people find you and what kind of services do you provide?
Okay, well, the funny thing is, I am out of all of this, I'm coming out of retirement. So I don't have a website and everything right now.
Okay.
People are welcome to email me. That's all in the process at Wendy Foster Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, @gmail.com. And I'm happy to have conversations with people. And once I get up and running on the website, coaching is one of my favorite things. I'm doing that currently. I just love it. It's just who I am, right? It's not what I do.
Yeah. Me too. Same thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Speaking, training, teaching, facilitating, just loving. Loving what is in myself, loving what is in others. That's what I do. That's who I am. I've really embraced that I am love. That's what I'm here for. Wherever anybody is in their life, I love people for where they're at. And I help them see that too. I help them see that what I see, the greatness in them. I help them see the greatness in themselves. And together, people like you and I are making that difference, right? Because we're showing people how to be their best selves. It's already there. They just don't see it or know it.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes people just need someone to reflect that goodness back to themselves. Thank you so much. This was so inspiring. And I think a lot of people are going to resonate with your early stories and how they sort of wove a pattern that was the undergirding of your life. And you kind of didn't realize it until later. I know a lot of people in ACA don't remember huge swaths of their childhood. And I loved how you said that you would tell yourself, forget it. And you did. And you're right. That's how powerful our minds are, that we can tell ourselves to forget things. And we do. So
absolutely. I also learned one important thing is that the heart is stronger than the mind.
Yes. I love it. I've been doing a heart brain coherence meditation for the last a little while, and it's powerful. Very powerful.
Oh, lovely. Oh, thank you, Barb. This has been so great.
Thank you, everybody. And we'll talk to you next week.
If you're ready to finally have an enjoyable, relaxing summer doing things you really want to do, instead of always following other people's agendas, I have some openings for private clients right now. If you are really tired of saying yes to things you really don't want to do and being overly accommodating to others, this is for you. It's time to start accommodating yourself. Maybe you're dissatisfied with your relationships and overwhelmed with all kinds of difficult feelings because of your interactions with others. If you'd like to get your life in order before the summer hits, go to barbchat.net and sign up for a free 30-minute call with me about my private coaching so we can get started right away. That way, you'll be done by summer. This is for people who are finally ready to make deep, lasting changes in their relationship patterns, including their relationships with themselves, their partners, family, friends, and colleagues. Go to barbchat.net. If you like this podcast, and I'm guessing you did, or you wouldn't still be listening, then you're gonna love the other things I have to offer. If you'd love pre-release podcast scripts and episodes before anyone else gets them, or if you'd love access to content from my private vault that I developed exclusively for my private clients, which is like having a work session with me without me actually being there, go to patreon.com/higherpowercoaching. There are three tiers ranging from as low as $4 up to $24 a month. You'll also love my weekly newsletter, Friday Fragments, which has content very similar to the podcast. You can check it out at fridayfragments.news. That's fridayfragments.news. Please like and subscribe to my podcast on your favorite podcast outlet. I'd also love it if you'd leave a review, which you can do either in the show notes or on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find my podcast so they can get the benefits you've gotten from listening. If someone came to mind when you listened to this particular episode, please share it with them. And my favorite place to hang out on social media is Instagram. I'm at Higher Power Coaching. Please DM me there. I'd love to hear what you got from this episode. I run group and private coaching programs on building healthy boundaries. Whether you need help with boundaries in your personal, professional, or romantic life, I can help. Head on over to barbchat.net, where you can hop onto my calendar for a free 30-minute Better Boundaries consultation. My ideal client is someone who is ripe for change. If that's you, I would love to work with you. My goal with all my work is to help you make lasting changes in your life like I've made deep lasting changes in my life. Remember, it's never too late to recover. No one is beyond hope, and healing is possible. Thanks for listening.